Welcome back, everyone. This is episode 10 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson, and this is Kelly Gallup.
Hello.
This episode is brought to you by our online website. If you like cool stuff, we got a lot of it. Go check it out, slidein.com. Like, subscribe, follow, Instagram, YouTube, all that fun stuff. We're throwing a lot of good content out there, so check it out. Today, we are going to get into a whole host of things, but I wanted to kind of start off, it's 9:48 right now, and that means Kelly has to eat his yogurt in 12 minutes.
Don't forget.
And I thought it might be kind of funny if you talked a little bit
about
it.
When you get hired here, yeah. If you get hired here, you have one job, to suck up to Kelly. And that job means at 10 o'clock, you remind Kelly that it's yogurt time. And so we're only getting 12 minutes here for them to think about it. We haven't got an extra guy. What's your name again?
Nemo.
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 Remember that one. It's easy. Nemo. But I told him his job, which he's not even hired yet. So he had 12 minutes to remember one thing.
So with the yogurt thing, I believe that's the only time I got fired was my second day. First day I reminded you at 10 a.m. to eat your yogurt. Second day I forgot and you fired me.
One job.
Rehired me.
One job. I mean, come on. It's kind of like naming employees. It's like, can you really handle doing one job? His name? Which is what?
Andrew.
Andrew, what's his new guy? What's his name's kind of generic, but new guy.
FNG.
That kid, he took it to a new level of suck up because he was back in Michigan working, and I can't remember. A couple of them did it. You probably did too, all suck ups. But he would text me, be like, "Why is this kid texting me? You know, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, and hey, time to eat your yogurt." Worked. So, he's still here. He's a terrible guy. We still kept him on.
Terrible.
Worst.
Bad guy, too.
Mean guy.
My third day, you fired me second day for not remembering. Third day, I had an off day. So I was out fishing near Lions Bridge. I set an alarm on my phone.
You did it.
9:55 a.m., I call into the shop, and I throw on a little accent. And, I think Matt or somebody answered the phone. I'm like, "Hey, y'all, this is Steve down from Georgia, and I'm an old friend of Kelly's. I was wondering if I could talk to him for a minute." You got on the phone, and I went, "Kelly, it's Braden, time to eat your yogurt." And it was a pretty impressive slew of curse words that followed after that. And
suck up.
It was hard to get fired on my off day. So
Nima's going to get fired. He's trying to remember it right now.
9 minutes, Nima. Nima's running cameras today. He's a buddy of mine from my other job. So
probably Braden's replacement.
Probably. hopefully not, but we'll see. One of the questions wanted to get into, we had kind of a slew of them on our YouTube channel. If you have questions for us, by the way, leave them in the comments. Gives us good fodder for our episodes here. We had a number of people ask kind of why Kelly is no longer with Airflow. Kelly's on with Cortland now, designing lines for them. No longer directly partnered with Airflow, even though they're still
They still do our lines.
Yeah, they still make great lines. They're in our shop.
No, but I mean, they make mine still.
Yeah, they still make Kelly's lines. Want to jump in, kind of talk a little bit about Cortland and Airflow.
I saw that on the comments too. A lot of guys said, "Did they do me dirty or something?" It was nothing like that. I started my career in line stuff with SA or with Cortland, I mean, through Jim Teeny. And Jim and I collectively we did the first streamer lines, sinking lines. They're just basically level lines. There wasn't much to them, but it was the first one that was for throwing streamers. And then SA approached about doing more of them. And I did that, and that was fine. And then one of my very close friends in this industry that have always, there's the Ray Jeff brothers and Tim and Steve. And Tim asked me, he was Airflow, he was the U.S. distributor. And so he asked me if I would join up with them and do lines with them. And it's funny because if you back in history, I was talking to you guys earlier about this. the first lines that came into my store, technically, were Cortland. That was the first line I ever had. But it was just a technicality because I had Cortland and SA. Cortland was the first one to show up when I opened the doors, right? But they were the first ones I had in my when I had it out of my house, too. And then ironically, which it's a backstory I don't think even very many people know about, but I brought in, I think it was second or third year, I brought in, and I don't know how I got a hold of them, some rep, somebody, asked me to carry these new lines from Europe. And they were supposed to be this just super, everything great about fly lines, and they're called Sue Burgess. And that's Airflow. That was the owner of Airflow's wife's name, I believe. And that particular line did not perform as advertised for me at all. But I held on to them, kept thinking, well, though maybe it was this or that. Finally, just got rid of them. And then Ray Jeff shows up, and he says, Airflow. And I knew the backstory then. And I was like, eh. I said, man, I don't know. These lines didn't work out so good for me. It's a European line. People don't know it. And he goes, no, that's, you know. And he says, you know, we can make it. They're great. And he told me all about, you know, how they make the lines. And I said, great. And so I went to Airflow for basically with Tim. Mm-hmm. And then when they got bought out by Mayfly, that was my connection was Tim. It was me and Tim. And Gareth, who is incredible designer, great. He was just so good to work, unbelievable angler, and like scary good. And so when they did, and it went to, you know, it was a U.S. held then, and then they no longer needed Tim. Well, and that just coincidentally, in that same time frame, John was asking me if I would consider moving over. And I've always had this thing about, you know, Cortland's the original. They're the OG. That's where I started. I just really, I fished Cortland even through all the SA. You know that. You know, look at my dry fly rods. I run 444 Peaches forever. And on my lake lines, where's the, can't remember what the name of it was, Big Trout or something. I don't remember. And they quit. They reboxed it, renamed it or something, because I let loss. I almost died when they said they didn't have me anymore. They did. They just changed it.
Just rebranded.
Yeah, that's the best lake line I've ever seen in my life. And I even sent it to Airflow once. Said, you need to knock this off. It's great. This is the best line ever. But anyway, I had this sweet spot because I started with them. And no matter what line I've ever been associated with, what company, everybody has problems. Somebody will have a problem. You know, it's cooking the batch, it's called. You know, we get the product goes away. Very, very few products are made for fly fishing. And in particular, the polymers that are used in fly lines. And they'll go away. And everybody loses it at once, right? Depending on how much you have in stock. And then everybody has to learn to cook the batch again. And that's why you'll see lines sinking, cracking. You know, one company does this, the next year one company does that, whatever it is. It's something not good, right? Nobody ever talks about how great things are. They just talk about this line's cracking or sinking or delamming or whatever it is. And so, but the one consistent thing that's ever followed fly fishing is that a 444 Peach never sinks. It does. I have lines that are 25 years old on my rods right now. I don't change. Jesus, they give me. I could start at my own factory from all the lines these companies have given me to fish. And when it's time, you've been out many times. There it is, and it's 444 Peach. I didn't film with them because it was contractual, and I did them on specific rods. I love my glass, yeah. That Lodic, that TNT glass that I fished. I love that rod, and all. But you've been there. I fished Fenwick Fenglass pre-73 almost exclusively by myself. Right?
50-year-old rod with a 4.4 Peach.
and
ain't broke, don't fix it.
And a
right?
Fluger or a Hardy.
Yeah.
And I love Fluger. Ta-tong. I love that sound. But any rate, and so when it switched over and Cortland was courting, so to speak, I just had a sauce. I mean, it's like history thing. It was
a little tradition, a little nostalgia.
Yeah, well, it had tradition, nostalgia, performance. But the thing that got me was that lake line.
Yeah.
That line, you know, I try to take care of my shit a little bit. But, I mean, I'll set those lines on the deck. I mean, and that line in particular had been so when I got talking to them, to me, it seemed like I loved that Made in the USA thing.
Yep.
That's always been a Cortland deal. You know, that was a, and their, you know, their lines are competitively priced, not overpriced like a lot of them, but it was just, but it was, had nothing to do with the ownership of one or the other. To me, it just, you know, I had this really, you know, Tim and I have just been really kindred spirits our whole lives, you know, not really that close so much as it, we just, not enough mustard in the ballpark for either of us, right? So we first meet, I thought, shit, we're going to go out, we got to go have this out. Because it was just, but we were such, and he's so, Tim is just so, he's driven, right? And that, as a designer and stuff like that, as somebody you're going to work with, that was really cool.
Yeah.
And then...
That's Tim Rajeff, by the way.
Yeah.
Casting champion.
Yeah. Well, Steve's the...
Steve's, okay.
Well, I think Tim was a national champion, I think.
Gotcha.
I don't know. He's they're both...
He's no slouch.
They're brothers. The apple didn't fall from either side of the... It's pretty much, they're ridiculous. I used to yell at him when we'd fish, Jesus, if you throw that long one more time, I'm going to... He did it just to piss me off. But I just, he's, and so anyway, it wasn't that I got shit on by somebody. It wasn't that I didn't like one company or the other. To me, it was just a, and you know where we live. We live in a line companies. We are in their zone. And I can't get warmed up to, and I sell the hell out. And I sell all the lines. I sell Airflow, I sell SA, I sell Rio, I sell all of them. But I always thought that the Cortlands outperformed consistently, right? Not,
yeah.
I didn't fish all their lines. And now that I've been fishing all the, you know, obviously they brought me on for more on the streamer side of things. But I got into that mostly just because I thought it was going to be a good fit for me. And I wanted to see, you know, a U.S. company, I really liked that part of it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't because somebody, you know, shit in my lunch bucket or something. There's no animosity, I mean, at all.
I think that's important to say because one of those comments was from Eric by Hook or by Crook on YouTube, and he said, I need to know if Airflow did you dirty.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of important to know who's out there.
Right. And that's the first thing from the truth is, and I know he just asking, he wasn't
right.
Implying. It was simply for me, I had been there a long time, and it is, I don't have anything against it being a European company. I just thought it would be fun. And I started with Cortland.
Yeah.
And I mean, I go back to when you could actually talk, I could call and talk to Leon Chandler. He would call and say, and he was the president, and he'd say, how's business? He talked really slow. How's business? Business is great, right? I really appreciate it. But it was really fun. And then John called, when, you know, there's just, and I liked the president. I liked everybody involved. That I disliked anyone, period. It was just felt like time. It just felt like this time and place and to go. And it was crazy because the day that I announced, I called and said I was, you know, quitting or text in.
The text breakup, Kelly? Come on.
The text breakup.
Not a call.
and it was so weird because this has happened to me twice. It happened once with Thomas and Thomas when I just didn't have room for another rod, and I fished them. I love TNTs, and I decided to put them on sale, and the owner walked in. I'm like, oh my God, this can't happen. I mean, on the spot, right? And so Brian Fletcher and I were we were sitting right here doing a commercial. This is just, God, it's karma's a bitch. we're sitting here filming this commercial, and the store's busy.
It's the announcement that you're moving to Airflow, to Cortland.
Leaving Airflow, going to Cortland. There's Brian and I, and Brian's always been a huge, he's always loved Cortland. And anyway, we're sitting here, and we're doing this commercial, and there's a guy standing here. And it's the owner of Airflow. This does not happen. He's on a family vacation. He's a super nice Jeff. He's a super duck. I mean, and he's a super nice guy. And he's a guy. He's built like a brick shit house. He's a big guy, right? And handsome Italian guy. And he introduces himself. I'm like, what are the chances of this? I've never met him in my life, right? And super nice guy. And then to make it even worse, I go down to work Mel's. My girlfriend owns the Shedhorn Sports. It's one of the biggest gun shops in Montana. And just a huge, they have this thing called the Rendezvous. And there's, I mean, every gun anybody that's in the business shows up, and they got, you know, everybody's out, and they got this huge thing. It stops Ennis. It's just huge. And I'm in her store just trying to, I go down to help, and I turn around and run right into Dragoo again. Well, I run into his chest about right here. That cap, I go, what are the chances? We've never met. I mean, and he's owned it for a long time, one of the owners for a long time. But it had nothing to do with getting shit on, nothing whatsoever. I still carry all their lines. I'm sure they'll take my name off of them, but
yeah.
I still carry all their lines. I mean, we carry everybody. We carry all of SA too. But Portland was, for me, it's just, It just seemed to be the time and the place, and it's worked out good. And all the new lines that, I mean, talk about getting preferential treatment. That getting those lines, all our new sinking lines that we're designing right now, how fast they get those. Brooks gets those things to me like instantly, you know. And the really cool thing is that it appears that we're kind of on the wavelength. He's the designer, the head guy is obviously fishes like we do.
Yes.
Because he even said to me, he made a couple of comments like, you know, you don't want to tell somebody who's a designer that, hey, that's kind of stupid, why don't you try this? But he does. I was like, that is the greatest, because I know he does what we do. And that's always been an issue. You know, in the old days, people would say, just use this. Well, that's not how you do it.
All right, let's do a quick yogurt break, and we'll come back to this.
Voila. For those who don't know, is that camera going?
It's good to cut.
Keep rolling for 1 second.
For those who don't know, when you see over here, that's why these spoons are over here. Yeah. A, I can never find the damn things, and B, I can yell at somebody, where's my spoon? It's right beside you, boss. Got it. Thank you. By the way, you eat 1/3 of a cup of yogurt. This is a great probiotic, antioxidant, blueberries. The yogurt is a carrying agent for the blueberries. And your 5 almonds. 1/3, 1/3, 5 almonds. Not 7, not 5, just 5.
All right, we're back after our yogurt break. And we're talking about Cortland and Airflow and all that stuff. You got any wrap-up thoughts that we didn't get to?
Not really. Not on the Cortland thing. I mean,
when are your lines coming out?
I'll get probably, well, the spring is what we're shooting for. But if I finalize those lines, I got 7 coming, I think. 7 or so coming on our third prototypes, right? Okay. Where I was saying earlier about making small changes here and there. by spring. If the problem is it's so freaking cold, you see this weekend? What the hell? It's 20 below shit, so it's gotta go. It's hard to go test lines in this. Yeah, I mean, it's not fair to the lines either, you know.
Yeah, you get way more coiling and all sorts of.
Yeah, well, you get everything, and it's, you don't really, 60 degrees is great, you know, kind of a cold morning and a 60, 70 degree afternoon gives you both ends of the spectrum. I was talking to Rich Strollis about one of his complaints on so many of the lines would goo on the deck, you know, they'd get all soft, but, and it's hard to build one that does, can't, you know, you got 45 degree water and you got 60, 70 degree water, but that 60, 70 degree water comes with 100 degree temperatures. Yes. How often do you fish 100 degree, or at least high 80s and 90s? Everything gets different. I mean, your boat does. Your boat expands and contracts. Everything changes. It's really hard on fly lines. So I don't want to test a line in this shit. I mean, there's no... Yeah. I can go out and see if it casts and if it sinks, but I can't... I won't know that it's a good, you know, that 60 degree water and 70 degree day, which most people fish as often as they can, right? Right. And so it has to, but you got to have both ends of it. So I think I'll have, and that, by the way, that was one of the things with Cortland where I said, I need to be able to make running changes in lines. And that was, that's a big one because most companies will not let you do that until they're not going to sit on old inventory.
Right.
And and that wouldn't be if it wouldn't be a running change. If I approve it, that change, it's going to be like, I think I can make this better. And we do prototypes, and then we'll discontinue or sell through. But it was hard to do when with a lot of the companies that they just didn't want to, you don't want to sit on inventory.
Right.
And so, but yep, that's, no, I have no, as far as my lines, I think probably next shipment of lines is this week. And, although I saw Jake and Kahana out yesterday. Stupid. It was cold yesterday.
Are they down by town?
Yeah. I saw their cars all over the place.
Nice.
They were like just, they spent a whole day, that's for sure.
Around.
Yeah, they're nuts. But anyway, yeah, that early this spring sometime, we'll announce it. We'll
cool.
When we do that next show or the next line thing, because we still got two more to shoot, when we do the compacts and then we do the my lines. Oh, by the way, we're trying to find a name for the lines. I can't wait to see. Yes, of course, it's going to be something down the lines of the flies, but something a little...
slightly nefarious.
Yeah, just slightly. And so, anybody got any great ideas for the line? I can't imagine what's going to come in on this one.
Yeah, so leave them in the comments if you've got ideas for Kelly's lines with Cortland, the streamer sinking lines that are coming out, and what's our
guidelines. As a series, huh?
What's our guidelines? It's got to have, you know what his fly names are, so something along the lines of that.
It'll have something to make it edgy, but just for fun.
Yeah.
Don't go too crazy. Yeah, I do, but won't use them.
Yeah, we
go
won't
ahead, go crazy.
Leave them in the comments.
I might mention it on the next video, but leave them in the comments.
Leave them in the comments. Could be funny. Okay, so I wanted to dive into another comment, another YouTube comment. This is from Jimmy Kane, J4N. He said, "Hey guys, thank you for doing these podcasts. I look forward to them every week. Been living in Big Sky for 12 years, and there's been a lot of change. More people in the area than ever, skiing and fly fishing. It is hard to always be in the mindset that we need the tourism, we need these people here. I always commit and get a few on the big bug. Nothing better than watching those eats happen. But I found myself over the last few seasons during the hatch," he's talking about salmon fly hatch. "He spends his time up on Hebgen staring at a better bobber in flip-flops. One day at the boat ramp, Kelly told me, Kelly told me to be careful with this lake fishing thing. It will ruin you. I don't think I'm ruined yet and feel spoiled to live and fish here, but any wise words or advice on how to keep the stoke high during the best times of the season when every put in is packed and the wade sections are lined with fishermen every 30 yards on both sides of the river? P.S. Thanks for jerk strip and vertical jig. It completely changed the streamer game for me."
Yeah, that's a tough... I was watching the news this morning. I literally thought about it because somebody was talking about how some levee or some mill, I don't remember what they were talking about. And how excited this gal was for the growth of the community. And I thought, you know, you get too many rats in the cage. It would be nice if they could say no towns can be bigger than 50,000 people and just you close the freaking towns. Everyone in the world, right? Because they're, you know, they become cesspools, you know? They're just disease-ridden cesspools after a while. Oh, God, every New Yorker in town, you're crazy. But, no, kiddingly, 50,000 would be good, though, and move 10 miles that way. But you're never stopping growth. I grew up in Traverse City, Michigan. Exactly the same thing. I swear the same people built the towns. Same growth problems, same everything. But as far as fishing goes, I mean, it is really super simple. You just get your ass out of bed. You go out at daylight like you guys do. You go out really early. You hit it. And then when you're done, you get behind them. And it's that simple. But if you're an 8-9-to-5 type angler, you just got to suck it up. Or do what he was doing. What was his name?
Eric? Jimmy.
Huh?
Jimmy.
Jimmy? Do what he was doing. I mean, I told him to be careful of lakes because lakes have, I grew up in Lake Michigan, so I've always had this thing fishing lakes. And I got out here and just happened to live next to arguably three of the best lakes in the country. I mean, you got Henry's Lake down there, Quake Lake, Hebgen Lake, and they will ruin you. They will, it's a very simple formula. More fish, bigger fish, dumber fish. What's not to like? And very predictable food sourcing. I mean, you know, especially in the West, the midges are just so predictable. Leeching, midgen, wash line, whatever technique you want to do. But, and you can be alone. I mean, you can be semi. I mean, some of the lakes, Henry's can get kind of crazy, but lakes are generally, people will go where they think everybody's catching them, so you can just leave and, you know, figure it out. They're eating everywhere. But there is no magic formula. Shit, I grew up in Michigan. You think it's busy here? You try 1990 on the Pier Marquette. When I started fishing that in the 70s, I guided it, I think, in 78 first time. I don't remember what year Johnson's opened the lodge. Jim and Tom Johnson opened Pier Marquette Lodge. But it went basically from when I started on the Pier Marquette, there was Walt Grau, John Clusen, and I. They were out of Grand Rapids. Both were coming in. And I didn't ever see John and Walt until the 80s. And they were there, but we never saw it because there wasn't enough of us to see.
Right.
And then we ended up kind of living together, the three of us, Walt and I did for a while, and, you know, different. But we would pick sections. Like, I'm going to go Green Cottage to Gleason's. Okay, well, I'll do 37 to Green Cottage. Yeah, I'll go here. And there's three guys, right? I think Johnson's had 20-plus guides there a year they opened, just that lodge. And it went to, and this is a river the size of the upper Gallatin.
Tiny.
Yeah. Like, running boats down. I had the first drift boat on it, if you will. I had a Fish-Rite pram. Remember John or Walt telling me, God, that thing's huge. It was a 13-footer. And it got so busy there that Hyde opened a factory right there. I mean, it was like, the reason I quit guiding the Pier Marquette as I floated it one day with Herm Thomas and JC, I think, I can't remember who the other, I'm pretty sure it was Herm. And we fished the entire section, could not stop our boat. We could not get out and fish one run. We're steelheading. And I said, holy shit. And it wouldn't matter. The only way you could do that, you got to go out at 4 a.m.
Yep.
And be ahead of everybody, right? But then everybody walks in. So there's no real secret to it ever. I mean, it's busy out here for 10 days a year. This river is busy. And for the most part, all Western rivers are. It's your hatch. You know, you go to the ranch during the green drakes and you go to the, you know, mow for the trike or whatever it is you do. That's the one.
That's when it's going to be busy.
But it's not 90% of the time on this river. You can just outwalk everybody.
I mean, my formula is
GYOB, get your ass out of bed.
Yeah, get your ass out of bed. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of 3:30 wake-ups in the summer, and
yeah.
there's only one other person I see that early, and it's Johnny. And if you see Johnny on the water, you know you're doing something right.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, and, get in early, get in late. I mean, what I always tell people
you'll
in the
never
shop,
stop the growth.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
if you love it, everybody else. There's a reason
there's
everybody
a reason
shows up here.
There's a reason we're here. Yeah. Right? You know, people would come into the shop and say, "God, it's so busy out there." Blah blah blah. I'm like, it's not at 5 a.m. It's not at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Right. Go eat your dinner and then go back out.
Yep.
I mean, you can find water. If
and
you
like
try
you, as soon as you get away from the big bug thing, that's what I just tell Jim. Go out. You know, hit the earlier thing and get back up on that lake. And yeah. or there's a million lakes around here. They all fish good.
Yeah, there's tons. Every lake in Montana has fish in it.
Pretty much,
I think. It's back to the lake thing. I hadn't done much lake fishing. I'd done a little bit before going out and filming those two shows with you out mm-hmm. there. And it really opened my eyes because, like you said, simple formula, big fish, mm-hmm. dumb fish. What was the other part?
Huh?
A lot of fish.
Yeah.
And
more fish, bigger fish, dumber fish.
More fish, bigger fish, dumber fish. If you guys haven't watched that episode, go check it out. I don't remember which one
which
it was.
Which one when I was...
But it was one of them. But...
And those were particularly bad days.
Yeah, they were great days out there.
They were the day between that when I went up and just absolutely annihilate it. I mean, that's the thing about lake fishing is that once you figure it out and you get on it, people say 20 fish days, that's cute. A 20 fish on a lake day when the midges are going is like your first hour and a half. So when it's going and it just, and it doesn't matter what it is, and they're just fickle enough to kick your ass enough that keeps you wondering that, but you have a 2 week stretch where it's just going off. You start wondering if this, well, you start stroking your ego first of all.
Yeah.
And then you go out with the camera and it'll shut your ass down in a hurry. But it gets you away from the crowd. You know, on this, the perfect formula here is to just run a 4 hour, 5 a.m. float, get done, go up on the lake, sit in the sun. Lay down and just catch fish.
Yeah. You know? You guys want to go fish lakes too, we've got a couple of guides that run them now. I know Hunter's, mm-hmm. you know, pretty dialed in the lake program.
Yeah, there's a handful of guys around. Henry's Lake's got some too. Henry's Lake is another. That one is kind of historically ahead of Henry's Lake. Goes back to the 50s on film. I mean, it goes back to it goes back to forever, but that was a real draw for the world. And by the way, I'm quite certain the term gulpers came out of Hebgen. Back in the 70s and 80s, when you went up there, you would just see flotillas of float tubes.
Really?
You don't see any now at all, but back in the day, it's like, and the gulpers are just how they eat them in that line.
Will you explain what gulpers are?
It's a fish that gets on a set up rhythm eating calabatus or trichos or ants or whatever it is, and you can hear them and you can see them, and they just set up and go and go and go and turn around and
it is
do what they do. It's maddening. It's timing because they just seem to want to go on exactly this distance, and the bugs are so thick and prolific that you can just rake them, and they're all out there. And It can be so blind, stupid, easy, and the next day you go, it's
so
like everything's perfect, and there he comes up, and he just rises right behind you, right in front of you, and eats the one. It's a blast.
I fished those a lot this year down in Ennis, which was, so much fun. It's the closest thing to, I think, saltwater fishing in the trout world of... Like, you're seeing a fish on a rhythm, mm-hmm. right? Boop, boop, boop. And then you have to time that cast and put it 3 feet in front of its face.
And you can do it that way, and you can also go shallow fishing, like I like to do up on Quake, up above, and you can sight fish cruisers.
Yeah.
And fish them with nymphs or leeches or dragonflies or whatever, damsel, whatever you want to do. And it's really... If for as long as people have been fishing lakes, it's really kind of in its infancy, if you ask me. Mm. There's I hate graphs and stuff, but things are it's just changing, and it's a great place to go practice, but develop new technique. I mean, that's what I love. I go up and when I start, just like with the streamer thing, when I get a fly that's eaten, I take it off and try to find stuff, but trying to develop new ways to fish, because most people on the lake are fishing either flat out gulper or hanging a midge.
Right.
And there's a lot of stuff in between there. So it's not that you're going to develop so much a new, for you, you're going to develop a new technique, right? When the European cat showed up, I think a lot of it had to do with Gareth showing up from Gary from Airflow, that very few people wash lined long distances. Nobody fished boobies. Very few. Phil Rowley, I know, did some back in the day because we did a show on Mission, and I was fishing boobies, and he had some. But now, and blobs and biscuits and stuff, there's all this European influence coming in, but it's all new to people. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, kind of like Euro nymphing's new, right, and people are doing it. It's just something, it makes it interesting. I mean, you go out and start setting flies that are 10 feet apart from each other, and you're stripping, and you got new lines that are doing, you know, parabolic sinks, and how you're trying to make a wash line work properly, and it's just fun. It's not new. Europeans have been doing it for a long time.
Right. But new to you.
It's new to a lot of lake anglers. I saw Phil did a show down on Henry's last year. Phil Rowley's who I'm talking about. Phil and Brian Chan are two of the greatest lake guys ever in history. I mean, you want to talk, if you want to see stuff on lakes, you look up Phil Rowley stuff on insects and lakes.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to have a PhD. I mean, he is so smart.
Four times over.
And it just gives you something. It's new. And I'm telling you, there's very few lakes. Back in Michigan, where I lived, I had never seen a fly angler on a lake in my life. I used to go in and fish some of these lakes in the quiet area by me, and Duck and some of the other ones around there, just jacked full of fish, full of rainbows, right? And browns, but a lot of rainbows. Never saw an angler in my life. Never once. Not even inadvertently to come up and say, hey, what the hell are you doing up there, feather flicker? It's just, it's crazy.
No, I really enjoyed the lake thing last year. I had a lot of fun doing it. Especially, I love sea fish. Throwing fish.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really fun.
There's
nothing better than seeing that fish on that rhythmy. Mm-mm. And then, I mean, it's almost an adrenaline sport at that point. Like,
yeah, it's what makes you screw totally, up.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
By the time that third one come up, and then it's
fold
like...
Fold one right on yourself. Look yourself in the ass, something like that.
Total headshot, like right on the whole fly line over top, overshoot it.
Yeah, the lake thing's really fun. Those episodes we shot up there, I think we only made one show out of there because they just weren't really eating it the second day. But I think we put out an Instagram video that I had a lot of fun making and chuckling.
Oh, the one me peeing off the front of the boat?
Well, there was that one too. That was that was really funny. Kelly starts peeing off the front of the boat and hooks up immediately. Hadn't seen a fish for an hour and a half.
At least. That's the day we started out first cast fish, and that was death.
Yeah.
And then that was my fault. They moved up high on us, and I went below them. They won't go down. Remember we short-leashed that thing, and all of a sudden couldn't eat our lunches. We were just,
yeah, so that's what was happened.
We're standing off the front trying to take a leak, and I think I had the rod under here or something. I don't remember saying. Holy shit.
So we blurred that one out. It was real fun. The other one was, I think we made a video called How to Catch Fish on Lakes.
Yeah,
and it was you like, so first you put salt on your carrots, then you eat a bite of your sandwich, and then all of a sudden you see the rod fly off the deck sideways. What Kelly will do is he'll throw his bobber out there, and then he'll be running multiple rods when you've got multiple people in the boat and just sitting them there, right? And then all of a sudden you see one rod slide sideways.
Yeah.
You know, well, fish come around in a pack, and all of a sudden we've got two rods hooked up. And
it's a guarantee. If things are going wrong, eat lunch.
Yeah, eat lunch.
And set a bobber out and don't look at it. Or run a bobber and run a sinking line, wash line, whatever you're going to do. The second you can go 4 hours of staring at that bobber and not have it go down. You pick up a rod to go have two out. As soon as you do, the bobber will go down and your rod will go sliding sideways.
It's just like it's Murphy's Law, it's something just like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna kick his ass. Yeah, it sucks.
Will you explain for our listeners what a wash line is?
Wash line?
Yeah.
It's a sinking line technique where you can run them multiple ways, but it depends on where you're at. You know, you can do what your regs are for your line. But how I run mine, if I can run three, you'll run. What you're trying to do is you're either going to run, a wash line will have flies 3 to 5 feet between each other, right? Mm-hmm. So you have your point fly, the furthest one out, and a point fly will either be, you can do it multiple ways. The idea is you're going to have a fly, and a fly. And you're going to throw it out and let it sink. And one end's going to, I do a lot of point flies, a booby. A booby's got foam heads, got two little boobs on the front of it, right? Mm. And it's like a woolly bugger with booby, boobs on it. And so it's
floating.
Floating, boobs. Yeah, they're foam. We can get a picture of one. Yeah. And it slows things down. And then you'll put a dollback or some sort of, buzzer, midge. Buzzer is a term for midges in Europe. And so that'll be here, and maybe a wet fly here, and it goes down, your line's sinking, and it does this big wash. It's three different zones, and they all start, and they kind of file themselves down, and you're retrieving at whatever rate you've decided, that particular. Usually, a tip on lake fishing is usually you're going too fast. You're usually, people want to retrieve too quickly. There are times when you go super fast on a wash line also. You throw it out, let it sink, and almost double-hand it in, and then pause it, double-hand it in, pause it, and you get a commotion going. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole idea with this three set. And a lot of lakes, you can only do two. So you just, you just play it how it is. You have this one floating, this one's lower. And then as it comes up, and then you fish the hang, you'll just let it sit there. You'll fish it all the way up to there, and then just let it drop back straight down. So it can be incredibly boring done right. I mean, it can be, because more people would rather do the really fast thing, trying to stimulate the fish and get them to, you'll come halfway back to the boat wide open, they'll never catch it, and then just wait, and then you do it all over again. But a wash line is just trying to fish basically the entire water column. You come down really slow, they're sinking, they get down to where you think's bottom, you just keep your slow retrieve, and you come back up, and you just got this big long wash line of three different flies. Well, parabolic lines are designed to do that now, yep, too. That's the whole idea of a parabolic line that sinks here and does that big arc,
yep,
and brings it back up. I mean, there are lines called parabolic,
right,
that, yeah, come down and are designed to do that. And it's really, if you look at it as boring, then you're going to have a hard time forever. If you look at it as, do I know exactly where the fly is? And why is it eating this fly? Why have I never caught one on a biscuit, which is a Daphnia cluster, I think somebody thinks. I don't know what the hell, it's going up and down. They don't do that. They're up here. But you'll have days where there's this blob of shit, orange and yellow and pink, and they'll eat that thing. And they'll eat it dropping, stripping. I don't give a shit what you're doing with the thing. And the next day, they'll only eat the dollback in the middle, or the buzzer, the whatever chronomid you're fishing in the middle, or it's just,
nobody,
and then
really
you'll have
knows
an attractor. A lot of times you'll have an attractor fly. So there's, if you go, I can't remember the guy's name, I subscribe to him on his YouTube channel, I'll see if I can find it. He's one of my favorites to watch. He's a pure European. I can't understand half the stuff he says, but I know the terminology he's saying, so I'm like, go back and go, oh, got it. And then Phil Rowley also has, I've seen two shows where he was wash lining, and I fished with Phil a lot in the last 15 years, 20 years, and I've never seen him wash line. So he had a really good description on it on his, just look up Phil Rowley Lake. And
it's Rowley.
And it's on Henry's Lake. I'm sure he does it all over the place. And Phil's one of those cats that he's not like me. He can say things and get a point across and make really quick.
Oh, you mean he makes sense?
Yeah, he makes sense.
Kelly can tie a 3-minute fly in an hour.
Yes, easy. Not everybody can have that much patience.
No, but Yeah, so the leg thing, I don't know, super fun. I definitely struggled with it at first. Thought it was boring, but I thought it was boring because I was having no success.
Yeah.
And I remember going up, you know, fishing ice off, fishing bobbers and stuff, and just I was moving way too fast, right? Yeah. I'd throw that bobber out, and if it didn't get eaten in 30 seconds, I'd strip it in and throw it out again.
I've watched Phil literally statuesque, sit on a lake and stare and never move his bobber for 30 minutes. And I swear to you, he never blinked. He just stared at it. And when it's slow, it's slow, right? But for river anglers, slow is slow means get moving. We move around. Let's go here. Let's go there. The fish in a lake go to you. You don't go to them. That's very, you can go to zones where you think they should be, but they still run in packs and they run in big circles, go around, and the food doesn't come to them. They have to go to their food. And so sometimes they're not moving fast. Sometimes they break up. Whatever happens, Phil catches fish.
Yes. Patience. Patience is a virtue in the lake.
And you're out there and you've switched 1,000 different things, you know, and you're Dennis and you haven't caught anything either. And it's just one of those lulls, right? You got to, and you have to be where the fish are. But
that's why I like the dry fly thing is it's, you know, I can go spend 8 hours on a lake throwing dry flies, even if I get my ass kicked. And it feels like 20 minutes, right? Because it's so engaging to me.
Yeah, you mean when you can see them, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When there's fish up moving around.
Right.
I just had so much fun doing that last year, you know. And it took me a few days to kind of dial it in with my patterns, tippet size of patterns that I was throwing. And then all of a sudden it kind of clicked and I had a couple great days in a row. And by great days, I mean I got a lot of eats and then they broke me off in the weeds.
Yeah.
Cause
you're on Ennis.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weed fest.
Yeah. It's a weed fest. But,
well, I mean, same thing you get over in Rombo or any of the, where you're going to have a lot of insect life, you're going to have a lot of weed life.
Right.
You know, so.
But really fun. And those fish, I remember the first one I hooked, I thought I was into a mid 20 inch rainbow.
Oh, yeah.
The way it pulled. And it was a 14,
yeah,
15 inch fish. I mean, they pulled.
They aren't
like
fighting
hell.
Current, man. They're a pure energy once you hook them.
So fun. All right, so I remember hearing this story, God, probably a year and a half ago, maybe more, and I don't really remember all the details, but I thought it's something our listeners might appreciate and find interesting. And I believe you were up at Steelhead Camp in BC and injured yourself and then created some sort of mouse town.
So where the hell is this going?
Why don't you get into that for our listeners?
Mouse.
Give you a little like window into Kelly's mind here.
I thought we were going to talk about all these new mouse patterns Jeremy and Dan were doing. Who asked about this?
Nobody, me.
Oh, I was going to say, how do they know? That was, that was in the Dean. That was Mike, Craig, and I. I think it was just Mike and I. And we were caching first day. We get in there, we go in a day or two early to set camp. You only fish for whatever, 7 days or 10 days, whatever it is. And so we flew in and there's this huge basswood tree, I think is what it is. It's unlike all the rest of the trees. It's got a really tight bark like a basswood would. And it's out, we're on the Giant's Pool and it goes out and we've always camped there and you helicopter in and then you got to cache your food for the bears. And this tree is very, I wish I had a picture, I might have a picture of it at the house. If I find it, we'll put it in there. But it kind of sweeps out over the high water mark where the river gets high and there's all, you know, stone below you. And it's perfect because you go up the tree hangs out up like this and then it falls like 8 feet below there for the high water mark for the bank. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to cache your food, you know, as high because the bank's already making it 8 feet below you. And Mike has been going in there for way longer than I had. I mean, he took me in. And so I decided to go up the tree. Well, Mike's, you know, with a pocket full of gravel, about $135. And I go up and I was about 100 pounds bigger than that. And so And I got shorts on and a tank top in true bodybuilder fashion in the middle of nowhere. But it was like 85 degrees, 90 degrees. And so I go climbing up this tree, and Mike has put these little spiral Ardox number 8 nails in the tree for traction. Mm-hmm. And they stick up like this much, right? Which, you know, and it's pretty wide. Shit, athletic as you are, you could probably run right up there. I mean, it was wide, yeah. Right? And there's branches, almost like you built a ladder up that son of a bitch. It was unbelievable. About every 6 feet or so, there's one here, then one here. So you could always knew you could grab one if some shit goes wrong. So I go up the tree, and I'm hook up the pulley, you know, drop the rope down, and I'm sliding back down the tree. And so I go down the tree, and I get about... It's about 6 feet from me to the ground, and I slide out. One of those spiral Ardox bends out on me, and I got to hold this branch. But I look down, I'm only like 6 feet from the ground, and I thought, you know, I was worried about, you know, castrating myself, dropping off this freaking tree in heaven because of Mike's little freaking nails for a 130-pounder. And so I swung out, and I held on with this hand. And when I swung out to drop, I tore my left pec off my shoulder. So the whole thing, about 60% of it tears off, had one great pec. It stuck out about to here. When I hit it just came out and just balls up. If you've ever seen weightlifting videos, guys deadlifting, and they'll see a bicep, or you'll see biceps are really common on videos. And they go whoo, up here, and you get a giant peak. It's really cool because it knots up way up here. That's the wrong spot, right? So I swing out like that. I'm like, ah, shit. And I was like, and my pec tears. I mean, you heard it. It was gross. I let go and fracture my left anterior cruciate. I hit the ground in the rocks, and now my knee snaps, and I'd already had surgeries on that. And so I hit the ground. Now I'm running around. Mike's not near me. And I'm like, son of a bitch, first day in on a 10-day trip. And so I go over, and I first thing I do is I realize that my pec is absolutely ripped off my shoulder, but it's my left hand, so I'm new. I can still move it, so I know I'm good to fish, but I can't really walk very well. So I open the cooler, and I get a block of ice. You never open the cooler, ever. You're in for 10 days. You don't open the freaking cooler.
No, don't open
I got a cooler. Chunk of this shit on my chest. Mike flips his shit that I've opened the cooler and I'm going to kill us from starvation. And I can't. I am in like mega pain. This doesn't hurt as much. My knee is like swelling. And so I went to the bathtub pool, which is in front of us, put my left leg in there, which is now mortally wounded. I can't walk. All I can think of is a freaking bear's going to know that I'm wounded the whole time. So anyway, so I'm kind of screwed for, I can't wade very well. I don't have a brace or anything like that. And so I would fish in the morning, and I wouldn't intentionally would put nothing on my left leg, like long johns or anything like that to keep warm, so my leg would just freeze. And,
ice.
Yeah. And I would come back. And after the third day, I was just, I was bear fodder, man. I was just sure in my mind that they can tell I'm hurt, can't move much. And so I got bored in the afternoon. I was trying to think, and there's a lot of mice, right? And so we take blowguns in with us, and we hunt mice, because they will literally, like you're eating, they'll just crawl up your legs. So they just run around on you. It's frightening where they... Sorry about that.
Yeah, what, it's your glasses are on that now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well. Where is
pull,
it?
Pull them off to Maggie.
Maggie. There we go. So, any rate, I was bored, and I sat down, and I decided to make it our blowgun hunting a little bit more. Just to give you an idea how many mice are there. We had this pot about this big that we found, and somebody else had dug it, and it was full of debris and shit, and it was a mouse trap. You just put water in the bottom of it. So we put water, that much water in it. Things about that tie, I don't know how many quart that would be. You know, it's a pot. We would fill that every night.
With mice?
Every night. Not even trying. Yes, they'd go and they'd drown until there was enough of them that they could jump out over on top of each other, and the trap's done. But it's nothing to get 25, 30 a night.
Yeah.
It's nothing to have him just run all over you. In the middle of the night, one night, Mike's laying there, he's bald. He's sitting like this. He's got his little beanie on, but it must have fallen off, and a mouse went up his head, and it starts spinning out. And he screamed. And we got a shotgun with us, right? And he screams, and I'm like, holy shit, I come up. Thinking, fuck, bears got in there, right? And he's screaming. It was a freaking mouse was spinning out on his head. And it was like, holy shit, right? There's just mice are every part. They're part of your life. You just, if you're scared of a mouse poop, go home. It's just, they're there, right? Yeah. So at any rate, I brought a picture of it just a week ago when we talked about this. But so I built this little store, it's a town.
We'll throw the picture up.
There's a town, but what you see is I'd had a box and I carved it all out. I have nothing to do. There's whore mouse and mouse of FUD. Everything says free mouse FUD, FUD. And if for those of you that don't know, Far Side comics were the funniest shit ever, right? And my brother was really into it. My mom would every year get him one of those daily things that had a Far Side cartoon on every one of them, right? My favorite one in history is this. There's this hallway going into a laundry room, and there's signs, and it says free cat FUD, F-U-D. And so, and the signs go into the dryer, and behind the thing is a dog saying, oh, please, oh, please. And you see the cat walking. Oh, please, oh, please, right? So the whole thing's about that, but in the front of it, right here, this was bonus time, right? So the mice, and I took this little piece of cedar about that big around, and I carved it out like a pie. And I made like dents, like a little crust thing. And then I put peanut butter in it. And then out on the front porch, Ellie.
All right, sorry, I had to let the dog out. She was squeaking, so.
It's all right.
Where were we going?
So on this, there's a front porch. You can't really see it, but this is like the town thing. And so, again, our only sport after dark is hunting mice with our blowguns. And so,
also, I wanted to clarify for our listeners who may not be watching on YouTube, Kelly's holding a picture of this house that appears to be cardboard.
It's a cardboard box.
It's three different roofs. It's a little town.
It's a town.
It's a block, like a Western
block.
Wooden sidewalk. It's very ornate.
So in the Mouse Fudge store, and I think the other one is an ice cream store on the far end. I think it's, but the front one is Whore Mouse. And so that's the whorehouse for town for the mice. And it's got swinging doors on the front. So I carved this little thing of out of cedar, this little pie-shaped thing, and I put peanut butter on it. And then I put on the front deck here, I put that. And bonus point was if you could get one, because they'd put their head through the door. These are open. This one's actually got swinging doors. If he went head through to get the pie and you could pin him, that's 100 points. And so one night we're sitting there. Mike might be a little high or something. And the door's open, right? And he goes, I go, shoot. He goes, and the dart goes, and he just falls off the end. But it was a way to, I spent, 2 hours messing with this stupid house. And we got so much fun. We never had it, but we always had a blast in there, right? And so Mike took that home. He packed it. Packed it for a couple years in there. And I didn't go. The next year, I don't remember when. And he brought it out. He's got it at his house. It's awesome. Cool as shit. But it was a, injury. What do you do on an injury day? So, long story.
Yeah, well, I think hopefully people appreciate that. I found that to be hilarious.
I'll never forget. One time when Jerry and I and Mike, we were all in, and it's dark, mind you.
Yeah.
So we put this, the fire, we put it behind the fire. So we're on this side of the fire. All we can see is you can't really see it. We don't have like headlights shining on it. And the mice are going back and forth. And you're shooting for everything you can, but the door shots were the money shoot. That's where it went down.
And so what kind of like blowgun was this?
just regular blowguns. But
can't say I have one at the house. Any kind of blowgun. Like I have a couple feet long, 2 feet.
Oh no,
long,
but four. Four. Oh, feet? Dude, I take your eye out at 30 feet with these things. They're incredible.
Really?
You, oh my God, you could hunt. You could hunt small game.
What's your? Is it a dart? What are you shooting?
Yeah, it's a piece of wire with a. It's got a plugged. Kind of looks like a funnel for the cup for the back for like your fletching, if you will, or yeah. Something that, you know, so that it's a dart about, it's a piece of wire that long, got that little plunger thing that goes in the back. I mean, now they got them so you turn them and you can't suck the friggin' dart in it. Some dumbass must have done that somewhere. Probably comes with a friggin' warning label. Listen, if you're too stupid to know that you can't suck the dart, you should not be alive anyway.
That's
but I mean, that's you're
a
just
Darwin
an
Award.
Idiot. Yeah.
That's a Darwin
so
Award.
So it comes with all this shit. And it's even got, they've got little holders for your darts on them. And it's I'm telling you that at 15 feet, if you did it, if you shot 20 darts, you'd start running a pattern that big. It's unbelievable how well your body is, just like instinctive archery, you know. You will do it. With a blowgun, it's even tighter. I mean, I've got pictures, they're kind of gross, but I mean, I got pictures of that one that came out, took 3 darts, and every one of them's within a dime of each other. Everybody shoots it once. It's an instant, you know, it's faster than a mouse
trial
trap.
By firing.
Like that. That one with Mike where he might have been tired, who knows, but it just goes out the end and goes.
Sounds like Looney Tunes.
Yeah, oh, it's so much fun.
Oh, that's great.
Steelhead, that was a long time ago, man. That was back in the 80s, I think. Maybe 90s.
Yeah, we tried to go up there and kind of.
Yeah, we were. Well, that was
make that film.
Well, we weren't going to fly into the Dean.
Right. Yeah, but go up to BC and film Steelhead with the same guys and all the rivers blew out.
Most of when Trey Combs wrote the book on steelheading, there was I don't remember how many. I have somehow, if you're out there watching this and you have my original, because I have a first edition, signed by Trey. So I had him come back and do a book signing with us at the Detroit show. Mm-hmm. And I ordered all these Steelhead books, and Mike's in it. I think Mike took him in first. But I ordered 4 cases of Steelhead because Trey was coming in. Well, it was in, I don't know what edition. And I get 4 cases of first editions. He about shits his pants. He goes, where'd you get these? He said, you know what these things are worth? You're selling them just, we're selling them at retail. Well, they'd been in, I don't know what, he said, I'll buy them all. I said, well, you can buy what's left over, but, you know, I bought them to sell here. And I think I ended up with a case or two, which they were $400 or $500 a piece signed. And he, you know, we went, I had him come in. And so I do not have my first edition signed by Trey. It was just really cool. But anyway, in there, if you're out there and you have my Steelhead book, send it back to me. Or I can't hunt you down because I don't know who you are. I have a ton of books that are missing, and I don't know where they could be. And I mean, in my life,
don't look at me. I can't read. So
yeah, I know.
No reason to take them.
But I got some coloring books at UPS. But they have in there. There's a group of guys. That's what he's. What we were talking about. We were supposed to go back. We're going to do it next year. In that book. Of the original group, I mean, the Bob Yorks and the Harry Lemire. I think Bob Clay and Mike are the only, I can't remember who's all in it. That's my problem. I don't want to make this statement, have a bunch of them be alive, but a lot of the people that were in that original book, I think Lonnie's in there. I don't remember all of them. Maxwell, I know, is in there. That's where we were going to stay. That was part of the story. I think Bob Clay and Mike are the only guys alive still. And so then in comes April Volkey and, you know, becomes this phenom in the steelhead of the world, really. And April lives on, actually she and Mike Maxwell were neighbors. And I think she bought their property now. I think she has, but she was there beside. So we're going to have Mike, April, me, Jerry, guys that were kind of, we were in the middle of it. You know, Mike took us in, and then, so we were in there in the center, and then April's obviously much younger, so she comes in as the third generation, and it was just going to be a really fun show, and we were going to go up and hit all our old haunts and fish for the same zones, the Kispiox, the Bulkley, the same thing that, you know, we would go into the Dean and then come out and go fish the other rivers, right? So that's a helicopter thing. And we did it on our own, and so we didn't do the lodges, but it was super fun. Then we'd come out. So that was the whole idea of that video. When we did the hunt for the 30, that was because we couldn't go do the hunt for the 30, if you're listening or watching, that was a video series that we're doing on our fly show, the fishing show part of it, where we were going to go into the Canada and film that. And the river went up, what was it, 30 meters or some ridiculous amount went up. It was...
I think it was 9 meters, 27 9, feet.
30 feet.
Vertical rise.
Yeah, 9 meters, 30 feet. It rose, and it didn't come in. It came in from... And so we had to abort the whole thing.
Which was really fun for Kelly.
Yeah. There's a little doubt. Some reason they didn't. Nobody wanted to give me my money back the day before the trip. So there, yeah, there's $7,000-$8,000 out the window. And so, but at any rate, that's why we did the hunt for the 30, that we decided, well, we had a really nice window of weather. We'll just spend.
A little too nice, actually.
Yeah, 80 nice. And sunny's kind of.
Yeah, in mid-October.
Yeah, and every river's so low we can't get our boats down it. But that was the whole idea of the hunt for the 30, was let's just try to make, you know, chicken soup out of chicken shit. So we're going to finish that.
It was
too.
Our backup plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got more episodes coming on that.
Somehow that started with that stupid mouse house.
BC mouse, yeah. Mice.
Which I thought we were going to talk about mouse fishing.
Well, we could talk maybe about next that time. Too. Yeah, I thought that mouse story was really funny, and
it wasn't your knee and shoulder that.
Okay, well, that wasn't the.
I was,
part.
You know, that's when I was still bodybuilding, and I think I was getting close to the end of my career, whatever you call it. That I was getting done with it, and I remember my pec had kind of grown semi back, but it never doesn't connect into your, you know, into your delt like it should. And I'm in there doing inclines one day, and the owner, that Dan, comes in. And I'm doing inclines, and he walks by, and he goes, "Nice pec." Because my left pec, when it had this big, it just stuck way out because it didn't have any attachment. Nice pec.
So maybe we dive into the bodybuilding thing a little bit. I'm sure people are
boring.
Curious about that.
No.
Okay, I guess we're not going to dive
That's
into
boring.
That. Kelly used to lift weights, and he doesn't anymore.
I do.
Oh, okay.
Kelly just don't look like
weights.
It anymore.
Gotcha.
I've just lost 60 pounds. Not quite.
All right, well, let's jump into
you
another.
You never quit. You should never stop lifting. Your whole life.
I stopped. I lifted for about 3 months. I broke my collarbone and gave it up for good. Useless hobby.
Do something.
Get outside. All right, well, I thought another kind of story that folks might find interesting, you kind of half told it when we were down in Chile on, I think, our second day, but you used some words that we can't really put in shows, or I think we should be able to put them in shows, but you don't want to, which I understand. So I had to cut a lot of it, and it was the muskie story, when you taxidermied a couple of muskies for one of your buddies.
Chuck Edgecombe.
And
I love that man.
Yeah. So
he's like all good muskie, he hated everybody.
Yeah.
Had a beautiful daughter, and she was sweet as pie. And I can't remember her name right now. And she says, you know, he doesn't talk to a lot of people. He talks to me because I'm his taxidermist, and I like muskies.
Yes, you want to dive in?
I don't know what the story was. I have no idea.
The one about his new Lund.
Oh, when the thing ate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was I mounted that fish. Chuck got a lot of the guys back there had 16-foot V
motorboats, not really, there's like rowboats, right? And Chuck came to my house one day, and he, by the way, I'll talk about it later, this guy Rob has been sending me stuff about muskie or pike decoys. He gave me a whole new idea. I gotta go. I mean, the way these things work now, I don't know if he invented it or not, but it's pretty cool. I gotta show it. I gotta show it on TV. But anyway, this Chuck guy comes up, and I knew he got this new boat. And he shows up, and when his muskies were legendary size. I mean, he didn't mount anything under 58. And they were huge. And he's on a lake in Michigan that's notorious for giant. Jerry Wilson and Billy, my cousin Bonnie, we were fishing smallmouth in that lake one time. And we always kept live about a 12-inch sucker minnow in the bucket. And we just keep it alive in there. We'd be throwing stuff. And if we saw a muskie on this lake, it was nothing to see him licking, especially at certain times of year, you'd see post-spawn, you'd see him coming in pairs tracking, and it looked like two alligators. They leave a little hump. If there's waves, you never see them. And this day was dead calm. And when we'd see it, you'd take this big, we used Billy's Big Zeb, 404 piece of shit. This thinks it's the greatest thing on earth. It was worthless. It's good. It'd be good for what we were doing right there, and that's about it. But he wants to fish Big Zeb for everything. And so we'd huck these sucker out in front of these muskies. And these two come by us. Now, we're in a 16-foot deep V, which is 50-some inches. We can see each one of these muskies is pushing 100 inches. Each one of them. They're this freaking wide through the back. And Chuck's, I don't remember what his biggest one was, 66 or something, 62, I don't know, giant. Something in that range. He's an absolute monster. So he shows up, and I think he told me he got his boat. And and like I said, a true muskie guy is kind of he's not big on growth. Right? No. They're not big on...
Don't love other people.
Not real big on it, especially in his lake. Like, it's a pretty big lake, right? And if there's a boat on it, he's not real happy. And it's probably 6 miles across. So anyway, he pulls up, and he's... I'd see his, you know, I had a fly shop, taxidermy shop, and this is back in 79, maybe, 80 or 81. And so I come out, and I see his brand new shiny boat, and I go back to the transom, and it's just a piece of plywood on the back of it, and it's got a stripping around the top, you know, so like a weather strip so that water doesn't go into the wood and all that, just covers it so there's no sharp edges. And it's bent up, and there's this big scratch on where you twist the motor on. You know, it's just like you're like a little six horse or something. And you you just tighten it down with two bolts, and, you know, and then it's not going anywhere. And so it had this big half-moon stripe, and it bent this brand-new strip up. And then I could see where he kind of smashed it down. And I go walking by the boat, and I look in the boat, and there's about a four-footer, it might have been 49-incher, I can't remember, something like that, and a little tiny muskie. I mean, Chuck just caught hundreds and hundreds of huge, and I had mounted two giants for him, right? And I see this muskie, and I said, what the hell did you keep that little piss ant for? And he goes, it died. And I said, what the hell did you do to your boat? He says, oh, that's why I'm here. He says, it's not what I did to the boat. He said, it's what a muskie did to my boat. He runs prop wash, and if you're not a muskie cat, you aren't going to understand this, but a prop wash run is, and he runs fast. He runs multi, you know, 3, 4, 5 knot. I mean, depends on, he had a lot of techniques where you'd swear to God nothing could catch him. And they're run, and he'd run really fast in the prop wash. He particularly liked 16-inch Psycho, 12 or 16. I can't remember. I think they were 16-inches musky plug. And it was called a Psycho. And he would run one of those in the prop wash, which is 4 or 5 feet behind the boat, and then he'd long line one way out there. And a lot of technique and speeds and different things. That he was way ahead of his time. And so, at any rate, he's running these things, and he's got a fish, he's coming along, and all of a sudden he said he was trolling. I can't remember how fast, but it was fast. It was 3 or 4 knots or something like that. And a muskie bit his prop. And it tore his boat. It stopped it, and it tore it out. And it stayed on the one side, but it didn't on the other side. And so then he's realized what's happened. He thinks he hit something. He didn't. Something hit. And he evidently saw the muskie or something. Now, there's a picture in one of my books, an old book I've got, of a 100-inch muskie. It's the unofficial world record. It's 99 inches long. It was caught on a lake. They don't know the guy's last name. They just know his name's John. There's a picture of him with his hand against it like this on a meat hook, on a scale, mm-hmm. in a butcher shop. It's the most impressive thing. And it's way bigger than the guy, obviously. But at any rate, he comes back through, re-rigs. He comes back through, and he gets a muskie on, and he's fighting it. And he knows it's not a big one. It's like a 50, which is not big for him. But it won't go anywhere. And it just keeps flailing around back there like it's somebody else has got it on the other end, right? And he can't figure out what the hell's going on. Everything, he's flopping back and forth and flopping back and forth. And so he starts reel. And finally, it comes in, just comes in. And it's that 49-incher that another muskie had bit and disemboweled it while he was fighting it. And he thinks it's the same one. Now, the 60-inch muskie, if it's lucky, has got a 8-inch bite, maybe 7, somewhere.
Is that width?
Width between, yeah. So it's got a bite. This one had 11.5-inch. It bit it and just held onto it. So you could see where it bit this 50 and that's why he couldn't, it wouldn't move.
Yeah.
And it's just flailing and they're rolling around, gator rolling out there, and it wouldn't let go of the damn thing. And so it comes in and it's gut. And it's just guts are hanging all out of it. So we mounted it we did a cast of the guts and left and then mounted the fish and put the guts on the outside of it.
Cool.
I would pay big money to have that mount back. I mean,
what do you think the 11.5-inch bite correlates to in Japan?
100 plus inches.
Yeah. That was a world record muskie that came up and took.
Oh, there's so many of them in there, lake. I mean, you see them. You go in there, and if you troll it or go in with a light at night, you see them. It's there. I had a friend who got bit by one. She used to swim on the river at night, and it was she's got a little ladder that she crawls up back on her dock, and she kicks one leg, and she comes up, and she kicks the second one, and fucking muskie bit her. And the cat, it's 10 o'clock at night. It's dark, and she's alone. And a freaking muskie's got her by the calf.
I need some new britches.
Oh, shit. I would never, I had trouble because I'd see them in the rivers, you know. I never saw them up in the trout rivers where I would be fishing. But afterwards, I mean, it shreds her. I mean, it lets go. It doesn't know what it's biting. But
right.
And I have seen, personally, like I said, Jerry and I and Billy saw the one that went underneath our boat, two of them, a match set coming at us. They both were almost identical. That fish went underneath the boat, those fish, we could see 2 foot on each side. I mean, and they're not moving. They're basically, they're going
cruising.
They're not hardly moving. It's like, and it's dead calm. And so we can see both ends of it. And we're just like, holy shit, right? You know, it was something. But that was it made it really hard because I used to dive those lakes. I've said that before about my diving for trout. It started for smallmouth in the lake in Grand Traverse Bay. And there was one spot called Deepwater Point that had, there were very, very, very few weeds in Lake Michigan. Well, in that part of the zone. But there's one place called Deepwater Point, which is the deepest part, I think it's 600 feet. It's like a hole, like somebody punched a hole in the ground. And it's Deepwater Point. It's, you know, just on East Bay. It's really nondescript. You're motoring, all of a sudden you see it. And you can literally, if you're in diving stuff, if you're scuba diving, you can literally push off and you can free fall 400 straight feet. It's just like a ledge, straight down. And it's just this hole in the middle of freaking nowhere, right? And so not far from Deepwater Point boat launch, right out in front of it and to the left, where there used to be pilings, and they moored some sort of cargo boat there. Back when, way back, I mean, I'm talking back in the 60s probably, the pilings are left, but there's nothing else. So I don't know, way before my time. And but there's one weed bed. And what nobody fishes pike in Lake Michigan that I know of actively. And it's got world records all through it. I mean, I think Scotty Vanderploeg got one that, out of West Bay once. It was a pike, and it was in high 50s, right? Wouldn't go through the freaking, he's ice fishing, wouldn't go through the hole. The guys had to go and get spuds and trying to get this thing, finally gap that poor bastard. But at any rate, I'm swimming, and I'm in the weeds, and I was skin diving. I think I had tanks or Aqualung or something. I can't remember then. And I spread these weeds out, and I'm eyeball to eyeball with a pike that is easily 60 inches long. And it's this deep. I mean, it's a foot deep, and it's just, and it just, he's, I'm sure it's wondering what the freaking bubbles are coming from, right? And right in the middle of this giant weed bed, there's this like oasis of sand. It's like a donut hole, yeah. Right? I've spread those freaking weeds out. I'm like, holy shit, and I'm eyeball. I mean, I'm sure my mask just blew out, like, holy shit, right? And it just stared at me. And then it kind of slowly, just like a, like when you go into the, if you've ever been in Bass Pro or Cabela's that have the big tanks, yeah. And they'll stare at you in the thing, and then they'll just turn sideways, yeah. Like this. That's what he did. Holy shit. And then I heard about this gal getting bit by the muskie. I was like, damn, man. I'm not sure about this diving thing. I always had a spear gun with me for whatever reason. I never shot anything. Somebody and I were doing it once, and we shot a giant carp, and it took us over the edge at the...
At the hole?
Yeah. We're just like, hey, let it go.
See ya.
I heard another guy who's... I heard he spear-gunned... small sturgeon, about 7-footer, and it took him over. And he held on. He didn't get his shit, though. He just said that. It just went straight down.
See ya.
I mean, that our carp wasn't going to... We didn't have tanks. We were just mass snorkeling, skin diving him. It took off, and it was dragging. I think that was a 60-pounder. That was the biggest carp I've ever seen. And it was like, holy shit. But we just let it go.
All right, well, I think that's a great place to wrap up episode 10 of the Slide In Podcast. Once again, throw comments in the comments. Questions? Throw questions in the comments.
Let's talk dry fly stuff.
Like, subscribe.
Let's talk hatches and dry flies. That's what it was. I wanted to talk about... Did I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
Well, we'll do this one in the next...
I was thinking on comments, this shit where Johnny's trying to explain to people that a non-hatch is a hatch.
Yes.
You know, salmon fly is not a hatch. It's something else. But I would love to delve into some of that.
Yeah.
Because streamers are fun, but, you know, most of my life was dry flies. And I love the idea of questions on dry flies.
Yeah, there were some questions about dry flies.
Something that was something other than, not that I'm opposed to always talking streamers, but after Johnny and I's episode 2, wasn't it, where he expounded upon it was a hatch and I was a moron, as usual. But he, that would be, I would love to, I don't know, if there's just questions about different hatches or favorites, or we talked about hexes and stuff like that, mystery hatch. It's ironic, I'm reading one of Tom McGuane's books right now. It's based in the early 1900s, I think. He's on the Pure Marquette talking hex hatch. Nice. And it's really crazy because everything McGuane talked about in that book, every spot he talks about, I called Jerry. I said, have you read this book? He loves McGuane. Well, he wasn't following me. He was 30 years ahead of me.
Oh, gotcha.
But it's the exact same pattern of the rivers.
Yeah.
I mean, without exception, and I'm sure he lied about a couple of them if he was smart, but... And he is, so, but his whatever routine of his river is exactly what I did. Hmm. And it was just crazy.
Yeah, that's kind of eerie.
I said, dude, I said, he's on our hunt, but he's like 30 years ahead of us.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't imagine.
There's no such thing as an original thought.
No.
Maybe there are. I don't know. All right, well, let's wrap up. We'll talk some dry fly fishing. Leave questions in the comments. Like,
or just
subscribe.
Hatches.
Or hatches. Yeah, hatches. Anything. The fun anything stuff. You guys want to hear about. It really helps us because we run out of ideas sometimes. So
never out of words, just out of ideas.
Yeah, never out of words, out of ideas.
That's, you know, I should have, I should have coined that phrase from Jerry Dennis told me. I don't remember what whose quote it was, some general, I think. Seldom in doubt, or what is it?
No. It's seldom in doubt. Often wrong. Often seldom, wrong. Yeah. Yeah. Often wrong. Seldom uncertain.
Yeah. Yes. That was frequently out of ideas, but never out of words.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for watching, goodbye. And we will see you next Tuesday.
Hope you enjoyed it.